Now we're holding on page Dalet Omid Bey's 12 lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of learning the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, and we left off with that after he passed away, Rebbe proposed marriage to his widow, and she said that you're not of the caliber of my husband. And Rebbe says, what do you mean? Aren't I greater than him in Torah, at least? And she says, actually, I don't know whether you're greater in Torah. He says, I understand that he's greater in me than Torah, but is he greater than me in Mais and Tovim? She says, on the contrary, whether he's greater in Torah or you are, I really don't know, but I can tell you that he's definitely greater in Maisim Tovim, in that he accepted on himself Yisurim, as we learned yesterday, and with that he was Mechaper on the whole Jewish people. So the Gemara says, but Torah Mai, where do we see that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon is greater than Rebbe, or at least that Rebbe can consider that it's so? So like this, we have to go back many years to when they were both Talmidim. When Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha were sitting on benches. Now, the way it worked was that the Rebbeim, which Rashi points out, there were other Chachamim with them also. They were the two Gdolei Ador. They would sit on benches. The Rebbeim would sit on benches, and the Talmidim would sit on the floor. So they were sitting. So there's two Rebbeim, the two among all the Rebbeim, the two of them are sitting on benches. Yasvi Kamai Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon and Rebbe Ara, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon and Rebbe are sitting in front of them on the ground, as the Talmidim usually did. Machshu Mafoku, they would ask questions and they would resolve them. So Amri, so the other Chachamim said, or Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon ben Gamliel, who's Rebbe's father. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha said, "Mehen onu shoysim, we're drinking their waters. In other words, we're learning Torah from them, because with all their good questions and answers, we're learning lots of Torah from them. And they should just be sitting on the ground. So they made benches for them. Askinu, and they put them up on the benches." So now, among all the other Talmidim, they're going to be distinguished as that they're sitting on benches together with the Rebbeim. But Amar lahen Reb Shimon Gamliel. So apparently the Amri, the ones who said that, were not Reb Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, but rather the other Chachamim, the other Chachamim who were sitting on benches. Because as we said, you had a lot of Rebbeim who were sitting on benches. The Gemara had mentioned Reb Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha because they're the main two ones. So the other Chachamim had said that it's not right that they should be sitting on the ground. So now they put them on the benches. But Omalahen Reb Shimon Gamliel, but then Reb Shimon Gamliel said to those other Chachamim, Prida achas yeshli beinechem, I have one precious dove among you, meaning one son, Vatim Vakshim la'abdehemeni, and you want to make me lose him, meaning you're going to cause an ayin hara that's going to have a bad effect on him. Achasu the Rebbe, so they demoted Rebbe and took him off the benches, and he's back to sitting on the ground. So then Rabbi Shimon Kocha says, that takes care of Rebbe, but you have the same problem with Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, that he's also going to suffer from the effects of an ayin hara. So, Misha Yeshle of Yichya, or Misha Einle of Yomus, is it right that only somebody who has a father to stick up for him, Rebbe, will live by not being affected by an ayin hara, and the one who does not have a father is not going to, namely, Rashi says, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai had passed away by that point, And so Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon doesn't have a father to speak up for him. Ben Yehoyada says maybe not necessarily. Actually, what it might be is that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai was alive at the time, but he wasn't there at the time. Anyway, so Achsu Nami the Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, so they demoted Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon off the benches. Cholash Daite, so he felt bad. Omar, he says, Kachashvitu Leikavosi. Apparently, you're considering Rebbe to be on an equal caliber to me. And Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon knew that he's greater in Torah, as we just said, that Rebbe had said. So therefore, even you might say that, in other words, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon is saying, in effect, look, nobody's worried about an ayin hara when it comes to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha and the other Gdolei Yisrael over there, the other Gdolei Ador, because obviously everybody realizes they deserve that position. The same way they should realize about me. Don't just consider me one of the Talmidim. I'm beyond that. Adar hu yoma ki have a Omer Rebbe Milsa have a Messiah later Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. So Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon changed his approach. Up until then, whenever Rebbe would say something in the Beis Medrash, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon would find some kind of proof that what Rebbe said is correct. Mikan ve'elach, after this, he wanted to show that he's greater than Rebbe. Ki hava omer Rebbe yeshli lahoshiv. So if Rebbe would say about something that they said in the Beis Medrash, I have a refutation for it. Omalei Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon. So Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon would say, kach b'kach yesh l'cha l'choshiv. Sure, I understand that. I understand you have what to object. V'zuhi tshuvascha. In fact, I can object to your objection. I can disprove why. I can you're going to all you're arguing such and such, but I can disprove you. I can point out something else that will contradict what you're saying. And Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon would continue. Hashta he kaftonu tshuvas chavilas shein v'hen mamish. So what are you doing over here? You're surrounding us with bundles of questions that have no validity to them. In other words, he was telling Rebbe that don't think that what you brought up an objection, and therefore it's the last word on the subject. In fact, your objection that to whatever it was that we just learned in Torah is not really that well founded. The point being, in other words, not that he's obviously he's not. You know, we're not talking about that he's trying to be a childish about it and start up with Rebbe, but it means, in other words, he wants people to realize what he really is capable of in terms of learning Torah. Learning Torah in the Beis Medrash is like a war. You have to fight with everything you have. And now Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon wants to show that he has it to that he has that ability. So now Rebbe felt bad that Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon is pointing out that he's not really accomplishing as much in Torah as he could. So his father tells him, "Bni al yeralach, my son," he says to Rebbe, "don't feel bad. Shahu ari ben ari, va'ata ari ben shul. He's a lion, the son of a lion." In other words, a great Talmud Chacham, the son of a great Talmud Chacham. His father was Reb Shimon ben Yochai, the great Talmud Chacham. So therefore, automatically, like he starts up with a he starts out with an advantage. So he starts out with an advantage, whereas you, like a lion, the son of a fox, yes, you're a great Talmud Chacham in your own right, but after all, you don't come by it as a hereditary thing. I'm not of that caliber, so therefore, no wonder Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon is able to outdo you and to run rings around. So now, one thing we see from the story so far is that, in fact, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon was a greater Talmud Chacham than Rebbe, because he was able to come up with refutations to Rebbe's refutations. He was able to disprove Rebbe's points. So that's that. Bears out what Rebbe was saying to Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon's widow many years later, that he was greater than me in Torah, and asking, is he greater than me in Ma'asim Tovim as well? And she's saying yes. But then now we see something else from the last point that we're saying over here, is that Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon is putting himself down and saying that I'm like a fox, compared only like a fox compared to Rebbe Shimon ben Yochai, who was like a lion. We're about to get to like Boimah now, so it's an appropriate thing to be talking in praise of Rebbe Shimon ben Yochai. Anyway, actually, Ben Yehoyada points out a nuance in it. He's saying, in a way, it means, in other words, like he started out with a head start, so therefore, in a way, it's not such an advantage that he has. He started out with a head start. You worked so hard. So Maharsha Shah actually first. So Maharsha Shah says that. So like this, in other words, later on, the Gemara is going to point out that a Talmid Chacham, the son of a Talmid Chacham, is Chokhmah of Torah comes more naturally to him, whereas somebody who's not a Talmud Chacham ben Am Ha'aretz, it comes with much greater difficulty. So therefore, you have a harder time with it. In other words, in effect, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that I'm not such a Talmud Chacham, at least not of that caliber. Ben Yehoyada, on the other hand, says there's sort of the other way around. We're saying that he's an Ari ben Ari, meaning that he started out with a head start, so he doesn't have to. So therefore, it's not such a shvach to him. It's not such a praise to him that he rose so high in Torah, whereas that you are putting in all that effort and then because you're starting out as an Ari ben Shul, so therefore, in a way, you have an advantage over him. Anyway, so the Gemara points out this, that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was saying that I'm not of the caliber of Reb Shimon ben Yochai, that I'm not as great as him in Torah. Behind the Omer Rebbe, later on, Rebbe says, Shlosha in v'son and hein, there are three truly humble people that we have an example of in the world. Ve'elohein, Abba, my father, Ubnei Beseira, the Jonas and Ben Scholl. The three of them, each one showed in a different way, exceptional anivus in setting aside their position in favor of somebody else. Rav Shimon Gamliel Hadam Moron. We just said that Rav Shimon Gamliel, we just said, he calls himself a shul, only a fox, only a lowly fox, compared to Rav Shimon Ben Yochai, who's a mighty lion. Bnei Beseira, we have the story in Pesachim, the whole story over there where Erev Pesach came out on Shabbos, and they didn't know what we do as far as the Korban Pesach being brought, and then Hillel came and proved to them that you do, and the Gemara says over there, that they, Bnei Beseira, up until that point, had been in charge of the Sanhedrin. They weren't the actual Messiah, they were sort of like interim, taking care of things, but then they resigned their position in favor of Hillel, which is a very rare thing to do, that a person should do that. Many times we find the Gemara itself mentions in a few places, it's often very difficult once a person has a high position to resign in front of somebody who's greater, but Bnei Beseira did that. And Jonas and Ben Scholl, the Kamalei the David, he tells David during the time when David is on the run from Scholl, he says, "Va'ata timlei chayisrael v'ani eil chol mishne. You will rule over the Jewish people, and I will be your second in command. I'll be your vice lord. So we see, in other words, now Jonasson at that point, as far as he knows, Scholl is going to live out his life normally, and then he, Jonasson, will succeed him. Obviously, Jonasson didn't know that he and Scholl are going to end up being killed in battle. So therefore, so he's voluntarily saying that I'm going to set aside the position, the high position that would really be coming to me in favor of you. But the Gemara says, Mimai, where do we see about these people that they were such invasonim, that they were so humble? Duma Jonas and Ben Scholl, you know why Jonas and Ben Scholl said that? Because the Goran Alma Basa David, he saw that everybody is following David. He saw that David is very popular and more and more people are coming over to his side. So he realized, you know what, I'm not going to be able, what's going to happen when it comes time for me to be king. Is anybody going to be interested in me? I might as well now tell David preemptively that I'll let him be king. And Bnei Beseira Nami, and as far as the Bnei Beseira, it doesn't show that they had such exceptional another. The Chazul Hillel the Odif Minayu, they saw that Hillel is greater than them. He knows this din about Erev Pesach on Shabbos and about the Korban Pesach on Shabbos, and he's able to prove it in a way that they weren't able to. So it's not a matter of so they know that there's going to be other questions that are going to be brought up in the Beis Medrash, which they're not going to know the answer, and they're just going to be embarrassed. So you could say it's not such great anivus that they voluntarily resign their position. Eler of Shem Gamil Vade in Vesanhava. Obviously, though, we can definitely show in from this story that Reb Shem Gamil definitely was an invasan because he had no reason to put himself down and call himself a shul. So therefore, therefore that shows he really was an invasan. If it was just a matter of buoying up Rebbe's spirits, he could have found some other way to do it that didn't involve putting himself down. Okay. So now, Omer Rebbe Chavivin Yisurin. So now Rebbe said, you know what? Based on all of this, we see that Yisurim are something precious. We see that Rebbe Lazar is much greater than me in Maisim Tovim because of his Yisurin. We see that his body didn't decay all these years and didn't get wormy or whatever all these years because of his Yisurin. Kabla Leitzleisa Shni. So Rebbe accepted on himself 13 years of Yisurin. Now here we have the Marshal makes a point. Doesn't mean that to begin with he accepted on himself 13 years. He accepted on himself that Hashem should bring Yisurim on him. In the event, it came about to be 13 years. On the other hand, Marshal discusses over here and says maybe it does mean that to begin with he accepted on himself 13 years. But what it means is, in other words, that to begin with, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, it wasn't Yisurin Shel Ava until many years passed. So that the Yisurim didn't begin right away, as the Gemara is going to tell the story. Kabla Leitzleisa Shni, so Rebbe accepted on himself 13 years Yisurim. Again, that can mean that he accepted on himself Yisurim, and in the end it was 13 years, as Marshal says, or it can mean that he accepted on himself 13 years Yisurim, but they didn't start right away. They started as a result of a story that the Gemara is going to tell in a second. So what were the 13 years? Shis b'tzmirta. For 6 years, he was suffering from smirta, which it actually says means bladder stones. kidney stones, which are very painful, Vesheva, but Tzfauna, and then 7 years of Tzfauna, well, elsewhere, the Gemara calls it Tzfidna, which is some kind of mouth disease. Rashi over here translates it by a word that in French means thrush, which is a kind of fungal infection in the mouth. Others say that it means, although I've seen other people translate it as scurvy, which is a deficiency of vitamin C, and it causes the gums and other parts of the body to bleed easily. But Amilo, others say it's the other way around, Sheva b'tzmirta, v'sheish b'tzfauna. Others say it was the other way around, 7 with kidney stones and 6 with tzfirna. Whatever the case, that made up for 13 years. To give an example, the Gemara says how much Rebbe was suffering during that time. Ahurayre devei Rebbe have osim ishabu malka. Rebbe's stable boy was richer than King Shabur of Persia because Rebbe had so many horses and other animals that this guy could become very rich from taking all the manure. Tosfos points out that the animals produced a lot of waste, a lot of manure, and this guy could go and sell it. And in fact, people would buy it even at higher than normal prices because they knew that there's a bracha that comes with it because it comes from Rebbe's possessions. We find an example with Yitzchak. When he was in the land of the Plishtim, where the Medrash brings when it says by Yigdala Ish that Yitzchak became greater and greater. People were saying we'd rather have the fertilizer, the manure from Yitzchak's animals more than Abimelech's gold and silver. So in the same way over here, the stable boy of Rebbe's was able to take the waste and sell it for higher than normal prices, and he became very rich from that, even richer than King Shabbat. Kad have a Romi kiss of Chavsa. So when he would put out food for the animals, have a also call of a tlosamili, you could hear their sound. You could hear the sounds of the animals from 3 mil away. Because in other words, there were so many animals, and it may even be that he wouldn't feed them until they start making very loud noises indicating that they're very hungry. So that's what I was going to say. How about Machabin? He would arrange, Davka choose the time to Romi Ba, he shy to die Rebbe Lebe Sakise. He would specifically give the animals their food when Rebbe is going to the bathroom, that way, because Rebbe was during the 6 or 7 years that Rebbe was having the kidney stones, urinating was very, very painful for him, and he would scream in pain. So this guy, the stable boy, wanted to drown out those screams. So he would Davka arrange at that time is when he's going to feed the animals. And that way the noise of the animals would drown out, he hoped, would drown out Rebbe's cries. And nevertheless, even with that, it didn't help. Rebbe's voice was still heard more loudly than the sound of all the animals. And even sailors in the sea would hear it. That's how loud it was. To a certain extent, of course, it's a bit of a guzma, but it can also mean that people all over the world knew about that even sailors in the sea knew about what's going on. We learned yesterday, for example, that the sailors who came and rescued Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon knew of his schusim, and they came and they davened when they'd been on the water to be saved in his schus. So in a similar vein over here, it would mean that even nechuseyama, that even people who are going on going on sea voyages knew what's going on with Rebbe, and they appreciated that his yisurim are saving the world. Ben Yehoyada, in fact, says not b'teva, Hashem made it b'nes min hashamayim, so that everybody should realize what a tzaddik Rebbe is, and that his yisurim are being mechaper for the whole world. Anyway, so that's how much Rebbe was suffering during that time, when during the 6 or 7 years that he had the bladder stones. Now, even though Rebbe's Yisurim was so tremendous, Yisurim did Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon adifim the Rebbe. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's Yisurim, in a way, were greater than Rebbe. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon came and left with Ava, as we learned yesterday, that he would tell them to come, and he would tell every evening, and he would tell them to leave every morning so it doesn't distract him from learning Torah. And the Gemara tells us in Brochas that is the definition of Yisurin Shal Ava, is when a person makes sure that his Yisurim don't disturb his Torah learning. So therefore, those were a very great level of Yisurim. The Ilu de Rebbe, but not the Ilu. the Rebbe, whereas Rebbe Yisurim, are they Maisa Bo, are they Maisa Hochu? They came because of an incident and they left because of another incident, meaning, in other words, so therefore, so Rebbe wasn't able to control them and to send them away voluntarily once the first incident happened. So therefore, they're not Yisurim Shal Abba, and therefore, they're not as great. What was the story? Are they Maisa Bo, Maihi? There was a calf that one time they were bringing to be shechted. Also, the calf ran over and was hiding its head in Rebbe's folds of his clothing, like as if to say, save me so I don't get shechted. So Rebbe says, Zil, go, I'm not going to save you, go, this is what you were created for, to be shechted. Amri, so they said, since Rebbe is showing a bit of a lack of rachmanus, then Yisurin should come on him. Now, of course, Rebbe is perfectly correct that a calf is meant to be shechted. But there's explanations. Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings a point that, and Ben Yehoyada says similarly, that this animal actually was a gilgal of a yid who needs a tikkun. So it's crying to Rebbe, instead of me having to be shechted, and who knows if whoever's going to eat my meat is going to do it l'shem shamayim and be misakin me, you be misakin me yourself through kavonis and things like that. And Rebbe is saying, so that explains why Rebbe, when Rebbe says, zil l'kach netzarta, what do you mean zil l'kach netzarta? The fact is, yes, to try to save that neshama without requiring it to go through the whole shkita process. And then also there's other points as well. Yes, an animal is meant to be shechted, but maybe only when it's older, not necessarily. Marsha says a long point over here that yes, an animal is generally meant to be shechted, but not right away. First it lives out its life. It plows, it does other farm work or whatever, and eventually when it gets older, you shecht it. So now Rebbe is saying that you shecht it even when it's a baby. So look, Hashem says in that case, Marshall says in that case, you could say a person is eventually going to die as well. A person doesn't die young. Hashem allows a person to live out a long life. What if they've done things they shouldn't do, or they haven't quite accomplished everything they need to? Then they need Yisurim. Therefore, Hashem caused that Yisurim came on Rebbe at that point, as if to hint to him, like you're taking the attitude that an animal doesn't need to live out its life. Well, by rights, then a person shouldn't need to live out his life either. And if he's going to, then it needs to be accompanied by Yisurim. So that's when the six and 7 years respectively started. By the Maisa Holchu, then we said because of an incident, the Yisurim went away. One day, Rebbe's maidservant was sweeping the house. There were little baby weasels lying over there. The kokan shalahu, and the maid is sweeping them up to get them out of there. Omala shavkinu. So Rebbe tells her, leave him alone. The pasuk says, Hashem's rachmanos is on all his creatures. Amri. So they said in Shemayim, horul merachem nerachem alei. Since he's having that extra degree of rachmanos on these little baby weasels or mice or whatever, so therefore in Shemayim we'll have rachmanos on him and his yisurim can go away. So according to Marshal, that means at that point the yisurim went away completely. According to Marshal, doesn't mean they went away completely. It means now they became yisurim shel Abba, where now Rebbe is able, meaning with the 13 years may not have even been up yet, but now Rebbe is able to control them when they're going to come and when not, which makes them now yisurim shel Abba, because now they won't interfere with his Torah. This that we're saying, by the way, Reb Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva on the subject. Rebbe would have certainly, on the face of it, Rebbe would have certainly been within his rights, and the maidservant would have been within her rights to throw out these baby weasels. You don't need them around the house. So first, Reb Moshe says, maybe after all, they're not such harmful creatures, so therefore that's why Rebbe was saying to leave them alone. But then he says, maybe not. Maybe after all, you don't want baby weasels or mice or whatever in your house. Fine. So Rebbe was going, lefnim mishuras hadin, and he goes on to say, there was a shayla, somebody had asked him a shayla, what's the din as far as killing animals or flies or whatever that are bugs that are a nuisance. Sarah Moshe goes through this whole thing and he said, look, you know, you are allowed to. We're allowed to kill animals for people for things that are necessary for people. On the other hand, if you can, he says, put out traps so they'll be killed on their own rather than killing them via dying. Still don't, that way at least you don't develop such a midah machzorius. So here in a similar vein, Rebbe is telling her, fine, if you have some other way, first of all, maybe we don't need to get them out at all. But if we do, then find some other nicer way to do it. Okay, the Gemara says, throughout all the years that Rabbi Elazar was having his Yisurim, because it had such a good effect on the world, because his Yisurim, where he was taking on himself the Yisurim that would have been for the whole Jewish people, and therefore he made a kapara for the world. Nobody ever passed away, prematurely. And all the years when Rebbe was having his Yisurim, the world never needed rain. And what's the problem? Well, why is it a good thing? Isn't it not a good thing that they didn't have rain all those years? On the contrary, a day of rain is as difficult as a day of din. So the reason is Rashi over here doesn't explain what it is, but Rashi in Tainus explains that you have it's a very noisy and there's a lot of tumult and everything. People can't do what they want, so it's as much as like on the day when the Beis Din sits, where there's also a lot of tumult because everybody's coming and going for Dinei Torah and yelling at each other and everything. So therefore, in other words, in a way, a day of rain, if we could get by without rain, would be a lot easier. A day of rain is a day full of tumult and hassle and everything, and therefore, in fact, also the Rashbash, a late Rishon, points out also that sometimes, in fact, there's too much rain and damages the crops in the field. So whatever it is, the point is, in other words, that rain is not. We usually talk about rain as a siman bracha, but on the other hand, it has its downside as well. But Omer Amema, and in fact, Amema says, "You love Tzorech La'alma." Really, if it weren't for the fact that the world needs rain on an ongoing basis, the Chachamim would have long since davened about it and asked Hashem for Rachamim and canceled the whole concept of rain, and we wouldn't have that hassle. But nevertheless, in other words, they would have arranged that Hashem would provide the water some other way. But the Hashem made the world this way, that it needs rain, and therefore that's how it is. But we still have to deal with the inconvenience of it sometimes before the Mabul. In fact, it says it would rain once only every 40 years, and the rest of the time they got their water supply in other ways. So here, in the same way, we're saying during Rebbe's 13 years of Yisurim, and it was machapo for the world to such an extent that they didn't need rain, that Hashem provided moisture and water for the world in other ways. And the Gemara says, I feel a hochi, and you can see that even so, even though all those years it wasn't raining, he have a akli pugla mimesha, if they would pick a radish from a bed where they were growing radishes, have a kaima beira malya maya, they would be left there a hole in the ground full of water. In other words, the ground was so saturated with water to make the plants grow that it didn't even need to rain. Hashem was providing plenty of water from underground to keep things fresh and to keep things growing. So that was during those 13 years. So this way they had the benefits of rain without the hassle of it, without the inconvenience of it. Time passed. The Gemara says, "Ikla Rebbe la'asre de Rebbe Elazar Reb Shimon." One time, Rebbe visited the hometown of Rebbe Elazar Reb Shimon years after he had passed away. Omalu, he asked the people, "Yeshle ben la'isat tzaddik? Does that tzaddik Rebbe Elazar have a son?" Omalu lo yeshle ben. They told him he has a son, but unfortunately, he's gone off the derech. Because zonish niskeras b'shnayim, any zoner who normally would charge two coins, double as much as most zonas charge, Seichauta Bishmona would hire him for eight. In other words, because he's so handsome, there's different gears on the side over here that says by above for four. The point being, in other words, that he was so handsome that the zonas were seeking out his services rather than the other way around. But it means he's gone off the derech and he's involved with zonas. The Marshal says doesn't necessarily mean two coins and eight coins, just means twice as much and eight times as much, or four times as much, according to the other Girsa. Whatever the point is, in other words, that this son of Rebbe Elazar Reb Shimon has gone off the derech and is involved in such lowly things. Asye, so Rebbe brought him, Asmecheber Rebbe, he first gave him a title of Rebbe, he first gave him Smicha, and the reason is now he hadn't learned Torah yet, or at least not very much. But the point is that Rebbe wanted to encourage him with that. Once he has the title Rebbe, then he's going to be, that people will call him Rebbe, then that way he's going to, that'll motivate him to actually want to learn, to actually earn that title. And he gave him over to learn by Reb Shimon ben Isi ben Lakunya, who was his mother's brother, his uncle, that Reb Shimon ben Isi should learn Torah with him. Kol yom hava amal leku yosi ano ezel. So every day throughout this boy is starting to learn Torah, but he's finding it very hard. And every day this boy would say, I want to just go back to my city. What do I need? This new life over here. I want to just go back to the way I was. I was comfortable over there. Omalei. And Reb Shimon would try to convince him. Or a different explanation is that Rebbe would try to convince him. Maybe it was both, of course. Everybody would try to be poil on him. They would tell him, look how much better you are over here. Chakim avadu yosach. They made you a chacham. They already called you Rebbe. The gulsa of the dava posu aloch. They spread out a golden cloak over you because that was part of the ceremony when they would give somebody smicha. In those times, they would have like a special talus woven with gold threads that they would put him on, that they would put on him to give him tremendous honor in front of everybody. The Rebbe Korulach, and they're calling you Rebbe. You want to say you want to go home? Why? You're much better off over here. Omalei, and Rebbe Elazar's son would say, Moimi, I swear, Azuva da, I'm abandoning that idea. So this kept on happening again and again, but every time Reb Shimon or Rebbe or both of them would convince him to stay, and every time he's saying, you know what, you're right, I'll stay, and then nevertheless, every so often he'd get discouraged, and his Yetzirah would try to get the better of him and convince him to go back to his old life, and they would keep having to convince him in ways like that, that no, you're much better off where you are. Ben Yahyada explains symbolically that also what they're telling him, Chakim of the Yosef, means now you're not in the grip of your Yetzirah. Now we've taken out that Ruach Shtus and we replaced it with a Ruach Chochmah. As far as the golden talus, that represents the covered of your ancestors of your grandfather Reb Shimon Yochai and father Reb Elazar, that now you have you're cloaked in a golden cloak in the schus of their Maisim Tovim, and you're called Rebbe. That even though you're really you're young and you don't really normally get a title of Rebbe at your age, but you already have that. So they're convincing him. In other words, you're much better off where you are. Well, he gadol. Eventually, he grew up. Also, Yosef in Masivta de Rebbe, he came and was sitting as a Talmud in Rebbe's Masivta. You have to remember, of course, you know Rebbe's Masivta. They're not teaching Stam the regular Talmudim. They're teaching the top caliber, the top echelon of Talmudim of that time. So now he's finally graduated enough to be able to be a part of Rebbe's Masivta. Shamei Lakole. So at one point, Rebbe heard his voice among the Talmudim. Omar, he says, Hakola Domi Lakole did Rebbe Elazar Reb Shimon. This voice of this Talmud resembles that of Rebbe Elazar Reb Shimon. Omrule Brehu. So they told him he's his son. So Rebbe realized, oh, now it finally paid off. This that he had brought the son out of this degradation and given him to Reb Shimon ben Isi ben Lakunya to raise him and teach him Torah. It tackled work. Now he became a Talmud Chacham who's worthy of his ancestors. So Rebbe applied to that the pasuk pre tzaddik eitz chayim, the fruit of the tzaddik is a tree of life, v'lekeach nefashas chacham, and the one who takes neshamas, the one who teaches someone Torah and takes his neshama and makes him become his son is a chacham. So pre tzaddik eitz chayim, when we say the fruit of the tzaddik is a tree of life, means the fruit that comes from a tzaddik, the children that come from a tzaddik, Zerab Yosi, Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon, that refers to this Reb Yosi, the son of Reb Elazar, the son of Reb Shimon. Now he's finally become a fruit who's worthy of the tree of the Eitz Chaim of Reb Shimon and Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon that he came from. And when the pasuk finishes, v'lekeach nefashas chacham, the one who takes, who acquires for himself the nefashas, is a chacham, Zerab Shimon Isi ben Lakonia, that refers to Reb Shimon, who made, now Reb Yosi is like his son, in that he taught him Torah. And we know, as the Gemara says elsewhere, that when a person teaches somebody else's son Torah, it's as if he fathered him. So now Rebbe is saying this pasuk expresses the whole point of what we accomplished over here, that now Reb Yosi has become part of an Eitz Chaim, and the first choice, in fact, Maharsha says, why the first choice in the plural? Because now it means now you have three generations in a row of Talmud Chachamim in the family, Reb Shimon, Reb Elazar, and now Reb Yosi, and therefore it means that now it has a good effect in retrospect also on Reb Shimon and on Reb Elazar, that Torah will remain in their family. So the Gemara continues, Kinoch Nafshe, when this Rabbi Yossi passed away, they brought him to the cave in Meron, where his father was buried. As we learned yesterday, Rabbi Lazar is buried together with Rabbi Shimon in Meron. So now they wanted to bring Rabbi Yossi over there, and a third generation of the family will be buried over there. And there was a snake surrounding the cave. And again, like we learned yesterday, it had its head, it had its mouth, it had its tail inside its mouth. So it was preventing them from going through. So they say to the snake, Achna, Achna, Psach Picha, open up your mouth and then move. Let the son go in to be buried next to his father. Unlike, though, we learned yesterday that with Rabbi Lazar, the snake let them through. Here it did not. So they couldn't, and they ended up having to bury Rabbi Yossi elsewhere. People thought it must be Rabbi Lazar. It was greater than his son, Rabbi Yossi. So therefore, Rabbi Lazar deserves to be buried over there in this exalted place, and Rabbi Yossi does not. Yotza Basko v'amra, but a Basko came out and announced, Loi mipnei shezeg gadol mizeh. It's not because one is greater than the other. In fact, Rabbi Yossi is fully of the caliber of Rabbi Lazar. The difference is Rabbi Lazar had gone through the whole tsar of the years in the cave, the story where he and Rabbi Shimon and had hid out in the cave and learned Torah for 13 years, and Rabbi Yossi didn't go through that experience because he wasn't born yet. So in other words, as great as Rabbi Yossi was, as much as he transformed himself completely to become a tzaddik of the caliber of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Lazar, nevertheless, he didn't go through that purifying experience in the cave, and therefore he can't be buried together with them in this exalted spot. So the Gemara continues another story. Another story with the descendants of a great Talmud Chacham. So here we just have the story of Rabbi Yossi, the grandson of Rabbi Shimon, that he started out no good, and then he became such a high caliber Talmud Chacham and Tzaddik. So similarly, Ikla Rebbe La'asri did Rabbi Tarfon. Rebbe one time visited the former hometown of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon is a couple of generations before Rebbe, but now Rebbe went to visit his hometown. Almost we asked the people, Yeshle ben la'usit tzadik troi makapeach hasbonav, does that tzadik Rabbi Tarfon have any children, that tzadik who used to be makapeach hasbonav? Makapeach literally means to cut off. We find an expression that Rabbi Tarfon would use in various places in Shas, that when he was certain of a certain halacha, and he would say, for example, about a certain halacha, that the way it's been reported in the Beis Medrash must be mistaken, for example, or something like that, he would use an expression, akapeachas bonai, literally means, let me cut off my children if such and such is not true. So like he would use that as an expression of a shvua. Like if what I'm saying is not true, then Rachman al-Tzlan, my children should be cut off. So now, so does Rabbi Tarfon have any descendants? Meaning they would pass away young. Omruloi, so they told Rebbe, Ben Enloi, he doesn't have any sons. Ben Bas Yeshloi, but he did have a daughter, and that daughter now has a son. And again, that son is off the derech. And again, like Rabbi Yossi, like Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Lazar, he's so handsome and he's so into this kind of thing that the Zonis are hiring him for four times as much as they themselves would usually charge. Well, again, Rebbe doesn't want to let it remain that way. Asiyu l'kamei, they brought this grandson of Rabbi Tarfon in front of Rebbe, Omalei, and Rebbe makes him an offer. I hadras boch, if you come back, if you do tshuva, Yahiv nalach bratoi, I will give you my daughter in marriage. So this grandson of Rabbi Tarfon did do tshuva. Now what happened? Ikud ami nosva. Some say that he married her, the girsha, but then he divorced her. Ikud ami lo nosva klal. Others say that he didn't marry her at all. Either way, the reason is kadesh lo yomu b'shvil zu chazor zeh. He didn't want people to say that because of her he did tshuva. People should realize that a person should do tshuva without being offered a woman with great yichus to marry. Now we learned yesterday that Rish Lakish did accept Rav Yochanan's offer and married his sister, whereas over here we're saying that this grandson of Rav Tarfon either did not take Rebbe up on his offer or didn't remain married to her for very long. Tosfos just says previously that evidently there's a difference, but Tosfos doesn't spell out what the difference is. Meshitta Mekubetzis mentions that since, as we learned yesterday, Tosfos learns that Rish Lakish had originally been a Talmud Chacham and then went off the Derech, then that's different, then therefore there's more reason for him. People are not going to say Bishvil Zu Chozer Zeh, because after all, he did start off as a Talmud Chacham originally, and therefore there was a much greater likelihood that he'd eventually return with or without that. Whereas here, this grandson of Reb Tarfon had not grown up as a Talmud Chacham and maybe not even as a Frum Yid, and therefore there's more of a concern about that. It may also be, practically speaking, Rabbi Yochanan's sister, as we learned yesterday, she was even older than Rabbi Yochanan, is not necessarily going to find a shidduch that easily, even though she was beautiful. Whereas here, Rebbe's daughter was easily going to find a shidduch, and therefore this grandson of Rabbi Parfit doesn't feel that he has to marry her in order to. Okay, so I'm going to ask, well, Lamalai Kohai, why did Rebbe go to such lengths to find descendants of the Chachamim? So the reason is, so one of these very popular teachings that different Chachamim independently said, when a person teaches Torah to the son of his colleague, he will have the schus to sit in the yeshiva shomayla. Now all these Chachamim are after Rebbe's times, but it means, in other words, this fact was known in Rebbe's times as well. So therefore Rebbe is looking out for chaveroi, for his fellow chachamim, and trying to teach his children and his grandchildren Torah. So Shenema, as the pasuk says, im toshu, if you return, Hashem says to the Navi, if you return the Jewish people to me, va'ashivcha, and then I will bring you close to me, the Fonei Talmud, and you will stand before me on a high level in Gan Eden. So you'll have the schus to sit in the yeshiva shomayla in front of Hashem. And v'cholam alamedes ben ama oretz Torah. And when a person teaches the son of an ama oretz Torah, where now in a way it's a greater thing. It's not just ben chaveroi, the son of a Talmud Chacham of his caliber, but even an ama oretz, which is an even greater thing. You're taking somebody who had no shaychus to Torah at all, at least not in the open. And you're making him into a Talmud Chacham. So then that's an even greater thing. I feel the Hakadosh Baruch Hu goes to Gzeira. Even if Hashem makes a Gzeira on the world, Mevatel b'Shvila, Hashem will be Mevatel in the schus of a person like that who helps a son of an Ama Oretz become a Talmud Chacham. Shenema is the same pasuk, and Yirmiyah continues. Hashem tells him, V'im Totzi Yikor Mizolo, if you bring out something precious from something degraded, namely a Talmud Chacham from an Ama Oretz, you will be like my mouth. In other words, the same way as my mouth is able to make Xeris on the world, you will be like my mouth in that you'll be able to countermand. So therefore, Rebbe is very interested in finding the sons of Talmud Chachamim, and some of them even that maybe they were the sons of Amir Oretz. Because, for example, this daughter of Reb Tarfon, we don't know who she married, that she had this son. But in any case, so Rebbe is trying as much as possible to go and bring them to Torah. So the Gemara continues. Omer Panach, Omer Yonchan, Omer Yechanan, Kol Shu Tamid Chacham, Bnei Tamid Chacham, Ben Bnei Tamid Chacham. When you have somebody who he and his son and his grandson are Tamid Chachamim, Shuv Ein Torah Pesekes Mizari LaOlam. The Torah will never cease from his descendants forever. In other words, it will continue in his family. Shenema was the pasuk of Anizos Brisi V'Gomer. Hashem says, "This is my covenant." Says Hashem. Lo yamushu mipicha, it will not leave your mouth, and mipizaracha, and the sons of you, and the mouth of your children, or mipizerazaracha, and the mouth of your children's children. Omer Hashem me'atav adolam. So says Hashem, from now and forever. So my Omer Hashem, why does it put in that those words, Omer Hashem, in the middle? Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ani orav l'chol b'dover zeh, means Hashem is saying, I'm a guarantor for you for that when you have three successive generations of Talmud Chachamim, ein haTorah pasekas mizara. Now, sometimes we do find, unfortunately, we have families that were Talmud Chachamim for generations, and then something happens, we'll talk about in a second. My me'atav ad olam, what does that last word in the pasuk me'atav ad olam mean? From now on, Torah keeps on coming back and looking for its host, meaning, in other words, that you have a family that for three generations were hosting Torah. So therefore, like, Torah finds it to be a congenial, comfortable place. They know that the Torah knows that it's welcome over there. And therefore that it'll keep on coming back to that family. Now, with that said, though, there was a vote from the Kotzker, and there's a vote that's brought in various other Sforim as well. On the other hand, you know, if you have an achsanya and you knock on the door and they refuse you admittance, then you're not going in over there. The same way we're saying Torah machzeres al achsanya shala, that's provided that you actually want to make the Torah welcome. If unfortunately, Rahman al-Atslan, you have families that they may have been, they're descended from generations of Tamina Chachamim, and all of us are Bnei Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, who are three generations of Tamina Chachamim, but we have to make the Torah welcome. Otherwise, yeah, Chas v'Shalom, it may not last in a family. So you can't necessarily rely on your Schos Avos unless you actually are showing that the Torah is welcome in your life. Okay. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Rabbi Yosef Yosef Aboin Tanisa. Rabbi Yosef was fasting 40 fasts to daven that the Torah should remain in his family. To ask Hashem for Rachmanos for that. Akriyuhu. So then, at the end of the 40 fasts, he was read. He had a dream where they read to him the beginning of the pasuk, Lo Yamushum Epichom Pizaracha. That the Torah will not Lo Yamushum Epicha. That the Torah will not leave your mouth. So now he has a guarantee. Now he's told Min HaShemayim that he's going to be able to, that he's never going to lose the Torah entirely. We do have, by the way, later in life, Rabbi Yosef became sick and forgot much of his learning, and his Talmidim had to restore it to him, as we find in many places in Shas, but he didn't abandon the Torah altogether, Chas v'Shalom, and he didn't forget it altogether. Anyway, Yosef Aboim Tachin, then he fasted another 40 fasts, and now they read him the continuation of the Pasuk, Lo Yamushum Mipichom Pizaracha. It won't leave your mouth and the mouth of your children. Yosef Meyatan Nisachriti. Then he fasted another 100 fasts, and a different gear on the side here says another 40 fasts. Anyway, Osav Akriyuhu, now in a dream, they showed him the pasuk, the end of the pasuk, Lo Yamushim Epicha, on Pizar Acha, on Pizera Zaracha, that the Torah will not cease even from his grandchildren. So now Rabbi Yosef says, Mikan Ve'elach, Lo Tzarichna, from now on, I don't need to daven for it anymore, Torah Machzera Salachsani Yishalah, because again, like we said, the Torah will return over and over to its host, meaning in other words, there's more of a guarantee that Torah will remain in my family. There is actually elsewhere where Tosfos explains that primarily this means when we have three generations, the Gemara based on Gemara elsewhere, that it means really more when the three generations see one another. When you have the grandfather lives long enough to see his grandson, a Talmud Chacham, that's when we're saying that you have this Chot HaMasholosh, this triple thing, which is less likely to be broken. So the Gemara says, by the way, speaking of Chachamim fasting in order to accomplish great things in Shemayim, Reb Zera, ki solik la'arid Yisrael, when Reb Zera was going to move to Eretz Yisrael, he grew up in Bavel and became a great Talmud Chacham over there, and now he's moving to Eretz Yisrael, Yosef Meyatan Nisa, he fasted 100 fasts, de l'shtakach Gemara Bavlo Aminei, that he should forget the style of learning in Bavel, he hechid l'nitridei, so that it wouldn't distract him. Rashi points out that the Bnei Bavel, the Amoraim in Bavel, were very combative, as we have throughout the Gemara, where they're asking and refuting and challenging whatever each other was. In Eretz Yisrael, they weren't Bnei Machloikas. They did it in a more Neuchin Zelazen, a more collegial spirit. They were able to answer things without a lot of questions and answers. Now, we had yesterday, for example, where Rabbi Yochanan is saying, when I ask something, the Rish Lakish would ask questions, the Rabbi would ask 24 questions on it, but it was a different style of learning. They're not doing it like Bnei Bavel so much I'm going to top you with questions, but rather it's more like they're doing it in a more gentle spirit one to the other. So therefore, Reb Zera needed to forget that style of learning in order to be able to adopt a new style. Many places in Chassidus, it talks about that here we have the example it's an example of where the Alter Rebbe points out in the introduction to Shari, I'm going to Shevo Yipot Tzadik will come. Sometimes a Tzadik has to lose his previous stature in order to be able to come to a higher level. And this is an example of that, because the learning in Eretz Yisrael is on a higher level than learning in Babel. Yosef Meyachar Nisa, then Reb Zeta fasted another 100 fasts, that Rabbi Lazar should not pass away during his lifetime, during Rabbi Zeta's lifetime, and then Tzorchei Tzibur are going to be on him. Because if Rabbi Lazar passes away while Rabbi Zeta is alive, they're going to appoint Rabbi Zeta the next Rosh Hashiva, or the next one, to deal with Tzorchei Tzibur, and he didn't want that. Yosef Meyachrini. Then he fasted another 100 fasts. That the fire of Gehenna should have no ability over. In general, Talmud Chachamim is not affected by the fire of Gehenna, but Ben Yehoyada points out that since he was an onuf, so he didn't consider himself a caliber of Talmud Chacham like that, where he should be guaranteed against that, and therefore he's davening, and fasting, and fasting for that. Another possibility, Ben Yehoyada says, sometimes a neshama of a tzaddik goes down into Gehenna in order to bring other neshamas up with him, so he's asking that he shouldn't even need to do that. That when he does that, that even then, the fire should have no effect on him at all. So, kol tlos in yomim have a bodik nafshe. After that, every 30 days, he would check himself. He would test whether in fact, the fire of Gehenna is able to have any power over him at all. Shogota, now, we don't have fire of Gehenna here on earth, but we have regular fire, which the Gemara elsewhere says is a tiny little semblance of it. Shogota, he would fire up the oven, solik b'yosef b'gabe, and he would sit inside the oven, and sure enough, we'll have a shalta b'nura, and the fire had no effect on him. But one time the Chachamim looked at him and inadvertently gave him an ayin hara, and so his feet got burnt. From then on, they call him the short one with the burnt feet. Zera actually means, it comes from the word zeiro, which means small. So he was so called because he was physically short, and then in addition, now his feet were burnt. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us a story where there was some biryonim, there was some chutzpah yaks in his town that called him by that nickname. But he was saying that so that's where he got this nickname from. Talking about the greatness of Torah and the importance of saying a bracha on it, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, My dichtiv, miha isha chacham v'yavanis zois, which wise person will be able to understand this? V'asha dibe pi Hashem elav v'yagida, and who is there to whom Hashem's mouth spoke that he can tell us? Alma of the ha'aretz, because of what? With the land destroyed. What was the cause of the churban, and what was the cause of the churban and the devastation of Eretz Yisrael? So Dover Zeh, Omru Omru Chachamim, Vole Pirshu, they asked the Chachamim, and the Chachamim could not explain it. Mia Isha Chacham, the Yavin Esos, what Chacham can explain it, and then nobody seems to be able to explain it. Om Nevi'im, Vole Pirshu, they asked the Nevi'im, and the Nevi'im couldn't explain it either. And now, obviously, they could say people are worshipping Avodah Zarah and doing other Averis, but we're looking for the root cause of it. And nobody realized the root cause. Until Hashem himself explains it in the next pasuk by Yomer Hashem, that Hashem says, Al ozvam es terosi, because they abandoned my Torah, asher nasati lifnehem, which I placed before them. And what does that mean? It doesn't just mean they abandoned it as they're not observing it. Again, we're looking for the root cause, the first, the initial flaw that led to everything else. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, shelo berchu b'Torah tchila. They did not make a bracha before they learned Torah. Rashi brings, first of all, because where do we get that from? Because the pasuk says, "Asher al ozer masterasi, asher nasati lifnehem." That Hashem says, "I placed my Torah in front of them." Now, in the bracha on the Torah, we say, "Asher nosam lanu Torah semes." So, in the bracha before, we say, "Asher bocha banu mikol ha'amim v'nosam lanu masterasi." Now, what does that mean? Rashi says it means they were in. Rashi says over here, and the Ran says elsewhere in Nedarim. This Gemara is also brought. We learned that about a year and a half ago that it means they didn't consider the Torah an important gift from Hashem. So they didn't show proper respect to it, that it's worth making a bracha on, and that was the beginning of everything else developing from there. There's many, many other explanations, including there's an explanation from the Rambam in one of his Trubas that it means that they were not giving a Talmud Chacham precedence to get an aliyah ahead of a Kohen Am Ha'aretz, and the Rambam in one of his Trubas and in Pirush Mishnayos talks very sharply about that. It shows a lack of covered for the Torah to act that way. There's a very famous Bach on it that the Rebbe brought innumerable times in Sichas, that making a bracha on Torah represents that before we're going to learn Torah, we're connecting ourselves with the Eivishter, because we recognize that we're learning Chochmose Ritzon Yishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they weren't doing that. They were just acting as though the Torah is just some science or some system of laws or whatever, and has no connection with Hashem. Whatever the case, the Gemara is saying that led one thing, that because of that, one thing led to another, and eventually it led to the Averis that for which the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, and Eretz Yisrael was devastated. Continuing on the topic of Talmud Chachamim and on the importance of Torah, Amar Chachma, my dichtiv, believe novin tanuach Chachma. The pasuk says, "In the heart of the understanding person, Chachma will rest." Over kerev ksilim tivadeya, but in the among fools, it will be known. So believe novin tanuach Chachma, that Talmud Chacham then Talmud Chacham. when you have a Talmud Chacham, the son of a Talmud Chacham means that, and by the way, as far as the previous piece, that's also why the Chachamim and the Nevi'im didn't realize this flaw, because again, it's not like they weren't learning Torah, they were learning and steiging in Torah and everything, but they had this flaw in how they related to it, and therefore it wasn't so obvious, and therefore Hashem himself had to point that out. Anyway, so believe Novin Tanur Chachma, Zer Talmud Chacham ben Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham, the son of a Talmud Chacham, so therefore it's not a chiddush to people. Yes, he's a Talmud Chacham. Of course, his father was too. So therefore, so he doesn't even have to publicize that he's such a Talmud Chacham. People know of him anyway. Over Kerif Ksivim Tzivadeya, when the pasuk continues, among the fools it becomes known, Zer Talmud Chacham ben Am Haaretz. That refers to when you have a Talmud Chacham whose father was an Am Haaretz. So therefore, he has to make it more public that he is a Chacham, so that because otherwise people aren't going to realize. Oma Ula, so Ula says, Hainu da'ami inchi, this is like the expression people say, istira b'lagina, when you have a coin, and istira is a small coin, in a bottle, kish, kish, kaya, it's always like calling out, it's making a noise, knocking around and rattling around in there. On the other hand, when you have if you have a jar full of coins and they don't rattle, so the same way, in other words, as much. So the same way, when you have a Talmud Chacham, the son of a Talmud Chacham, he's like a coin among a whole bunch of other coins in a bottle, and you don't really hear much of it. But when you have one individual coin over there, like one Talmud Chacham in a family, then therefore it becomes more well known. People know of it. Mao Shaw actually points out that you don't usually, Tosfos points out that it also part of the point is you don't usually put coins another point. It's not just that an individual coin versus a whole bunch of coins, like we're saying, it's also the fact, what's a coin doing in a bottle in the first place? You don't usually put a coin inside a bottle. So if you put it in a purse where it usually is, it wouldn't make a noise. You put it in a bottle, which is an unusual place for it, then it makes a lot of noise and rattling. The same way when you have a Talmud Chacham in a family of Am Haaretz, where like you wouldn't expect him to be there in the first place, then like you hear a lot from him. He becomes well known. Continues the Gemara. What does it mean? A pasuk in Iyov, Katan v'gadol shamhu, the small and the great are there together. And the simple meaning Iyov is saying that after a person passes away, the small and the great are all equally there in the grave. And the slave is free from his master. So what do you mean? Of course, we know that the small and the great are there. What is Iyov pointing out? Ella, no, what Pasuk is hinting at is, when a person makes himself small over Divrei Torah, he humbles himself and works hard on learning Torah in this world, then he becomes greater for that in Olam Haba. When he acts as far as words of Torah like an Eved in this world, he's going to work on it tremendously and put in all the effort that he can, like an Eved does, then Nasa Chofshi L'Olam Haba, then he becomes free and he gains great distinction in Olam Haba. Tosfos says that actually this, and not Tosfos, Maor Shor says this can hint at David HaMelech, where he was machd in atzmei al divrei Torah, that even when he was young, that throughout his life, he always humbled himself in front of the people who are greater than him. He never stood on ceremony. He always was willing to go to people who are greater than him in Torah to learn, even when he was a king. So therefore, he became gadol la'olam haba. And the same way that he was eved, and as far as eved, and chofshi, Maor Shor says, can hint at Moshe Rabbeinu. That he was Moshe Avdi, and therefore he becomes Chofshi, that even the Malach HaMavis had no control over him when he passed away, because he passed away with Misas Nesheka. And Maor Shor says both of them, we find in the Gemara, they were both Nechshad Me'eshes Ish, which is why we're putting them together over here, to show, obviously, that those claims about them were completely unfounded. The Gemara tells, Rish Lakish have Mitzayin Ma'auta Dirabanan. Rish Lakish was going around and marking the caves where the Chachamim are buried. This way people won't accidentally become Tomei, and in particular Kohenim who are eating Truma won't accidentally become Tomei from being over those graves. Kimotel Ma'auta Dirabchia, when he came to the cave where the Priya is buried, the Almim Mine, it was hidden from him and he couldn't find it. In fact, the Yerushalmi brings on it that he fasted many, many fasts in order to be able to find it. So here the Gemara just says, Cholash Daite, he felt bad. Omar, he says, Rabbanu Shalom, Loi Pil Palti Torah Kamo. So did I not Was I not methodical? Did I not to delve into and come up with new ideas and new malachim and whatever in Torah as much as he did? And the Rishami add that he fasted hundreds of fasts to be able to. So Yotza Baskel v'Omer, Baskel came out and said, Torah k'mosi pil palta. Yes, you did pilpul and Torah. You delved into and came up with new ideas and new ways of understanding and analyzing Torah like him. But Torah k'mosi lo dibatzta. But you did not spread Torah in the world to the extent that he did. What do we mean? When we find that Reb Chanina and Reb Chiya would argue among them, which one's approach to spreading Torah in the world is better? So Reb Chanina would say, you're starting up with me. You think that you're greater than me. You should know my level of knowledge of Torah is so much that if the Torah were to be forgotten from among Jewish people, I would be able to restore it through my pupil, because I'm so much able to understand to derive one thing from another in Torah that I would be able to put it all back together. Lord, so Reb Chiya answers back, are you starting up with me? Do you think that your way of learning is greater than mine? You're saying if the Torah were to be forgotten, you could reconstruct it. I make sure to begin with that the Torah shouldn't be forgotten from the Jewish people. Maya Vidna, and he describes, what do? Azlina v'shedina kitna, I go and plant flax. Begadilna nishvi, I take the flax and I weave it into nets. But say yidna tobi, I use the nets to trap deer. I give the meat of the deer to Yisoimim. So that alone is a big plus right there. But then in addition, ba'arichna megilta, I use the skin to make megillas. V'chasavna chamisha chumshi, I write five chumashim, one on each parchment. And so now the point is, in other words, Marashal makes the point. He wanted to make sure that everything that he's doing, he could have on the face of it, he could have bought parchment from somebody else and had somebody else write them. He wanted that all the preparatory steps to teaching Torah to children should be done by himself, so that they'll be done as much as with the greatest kavonis, l'shem shamayim. And that way it'll have the most effect on the children that he's going to teach. The Salikna Lamosa, then I go to a city where they don't have Malamdim for the children. Or Makrina Chamisha Yanuki, I teach the five Chumashin Bachamisha Chumshi. I gather five of the children and I teach them the five Chumashin. Each one, I work with them on one Chumash. Or Masnina Shitsi Yanuki Shisha Sidri. Six other kids, I teach the Shisha Sidri Mishnah. And then I tell them, Adha down of Osina, by the time I come back, I'm leaving town now to go to another place and do the same thing again, to do Mitzvah Torah in another town. Meanwhile, you 11 children who have Torah. You teach each other the Mikra and the Mishnah that you've learned, so eventually all of you will know everything. Right now, you have specialized with Chumash Bereishis and you Chumash Shmos, etc. Now you'll teach each other, you'll be each other's Malamdim. And that way, Reb Chiya says, in that way, I make sure that the Torah will never be forgotten, because in all the towns now, we're going to have children who've learned Chumash and who've learned Mishnayos. So now Baskel is telling Rav Shlokish, as great as you are in Torah, and as much as your accomplishments are in pupil of Torah, nevertheless, your accomplishments in spreading Torah in the world are not as great as Reb Chiya. Hainu to Omer Rebbe. This explains what Rebbe says, and we learned this in Ksubas a couple of years back as well. How great are the deeds of Chia, that he does tremendous things to make sure that that Torah should never be forgotten. Does that mean Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says to Rebbe that what Rabbi Chia is accomplishing is even greater than what you do? You, after all, compose the Mishnah for the whole Jewish people. And Rebbe says yes. He asks him, "Afilo me Abba, are you telling me that what Reb Chiya is accomplishing is even greater than what my father Reb Yossi accomplished?" Amalei, so Rebbe says, "Chas v'shalom lo tehei kazois v'Yisrael." Such a thing should never be said among the Jewish people, because what Reb Yossi has accomplished in the world in his times is even greater than what I accomplished, and even greater than what the than what Rabbi Chiya is accomplishing. How so? So so Maharsha says we find Rebbe himself, Mishemes Rebbe Botla Anova Yirashet. What we find Rabbi Yossi, it says says I never even looked at my mila. So therefore, so like so Rabbi Yossi was a, had a very high caliber of Yiras Shemayim, and therefore Rebbe is saying that that I don't even reach him. I don't even reach his caliber in that. In fact, Rebbe might have been saying that out of Anivus, because we said because we're saying that when Rebbe passed away, Anova and Yirashet disappeared from the world, so he might have actually been greater than Rabbi Yossi, and he's just saying this out of Anivus. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Last night I saw Rabbi Yossi Reb Chanina in a dream. I asked him, "Eitzel mi ata takua? Who are you sitting next to in the yeshiva shomayla?" Takua literally means like planted, like you as if like your tent is planted over there. Amalei tells me, "Eitzel Rabbi Yechanan, next to Rabbi Yechanan." Rabbi Yechanan eitzel mi, eitzel Rabbi Yana. Rabbi Yana was Rabbi Yechanan's Reb. Rabbi Yana eitzel mi, eitzel Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina eitzel mi, eitzel Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chanina is sitting next to Rabbi Chiya. Amauti loy Rabbi Yechanan eitzel Rabbi Chiya loy. Doesn't Rabbi Yechanan deserve to be sitting next to Rabbi Chiya? Isn't he great enough for that? Omali, and Reb Zera says, Reb Yossi told me in this dream, Ba'asad is cooking the nura in a place where there are sparks of fire over Urin de Esha, and where there's burning torches of fire, man ma'ayo, barnapcha l'taman, who would bring barnapcha into there? Reb Yechanan is called barnapcha, which means either that his father was Abnapcha, means a blacksmith. So either Reb Yechanan's father was actually a blacksmith, or he's called that the Lashon Sagi Nohar because he was very, very handsome and beautiful, as we learned yesterday. Whatever the case, the point is, Rabbi Yossi is using a figure of speech. In other words, like a blacksmith needs to you need a blacksmith when the fire has gone out, the Maharsha explains. So therefore, so then you need a blacksmith will help fan the fire. Here, Rabbi Chiya himself is so great. There's such sparks of fire and torches of fire over there where he's learning that Rabbi Yechanan doesn't need to be there. Rabbi Yechanan, as great as Rabbi Yechanan is, he doesn't need to be near Rabbi Chiya because Rabbi Chiya is far greater than him. We'll continue tomorrow with more of these stories about the greatness of the various chachamim and so forth.